With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi there, and welcome again to the update, which is now. I'm doing several of these a week because obviously there's a heck of a lot to talk about going on in the world at the moment, and we try to bring hopefully a little bit of analysis to what we're doing here. The topic we're looking at once again here are the events in Ukraine, but they're not really events that are just limited to Ukraine. This is a crisis that is spreading throughout Eastern Europe and the what would have been the former Soviet Empire, as we can see with the tensions that are emerging around Moldova and Transnistria. So, if you don't know where Transnistria is, and you follow world affairs, look it up. Google Earth it, because this is going to be important. There are moves afoot there by, it's unclear as to by whom, but I'm sure you can probably guess, to widen the scope of the conflict. Moldova is one of the original breakaway republics from the Soviet Union. It became an independent state in 1991, following the collapse of the Soviet Union. But Moldova itself always was part of the kind of the world of Romania, part of kind of a greater Romania. It became part of the Soviet Union as a result of the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact of August 1939, where Bukovina and Bessarabia were merged with the Moldavian Autonomous Soviet Socialist Republic, which had been part of the Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic to make the Moldovan Soviet Socialist Republic. So Moldova had a long history of Romanian influence, of Ottoman influence, and slowly as these things declined of Russian influence and assimilation into a greater Russian and a greater Soviet Empire. So it's one of these countries that has the misfortune to be wedged between empires, and rarely do they fare well. After the Declaration of Independence and the adoption of a constitution in 1992 and the ratification of Moldova as a full United Nations member in 1994, Russia used separatism, nationalist separatism in Transnistria, which is the eastern portion, sort of an eastern corridor of Moldova, in order to destabilize the country, and even though there's no land border with Russia, as an opportunity to place troops there and to protect a kind of a Russian-speaking ethnic minority. This is part of a long-established Russian playbook. Post-Soviet Russian playbook of protecting nationalities in order to kind of extend Russia's foreign policy goals into those regions that it lost as a result of the collapse of the Soviet Empire. And sort of Transnistria is going to be a place where Russia causes Russian operations against Moldova, to destabilize Moldova, are going to be played. Why now? Partly in order to extend the conflict and to create new theatres, new diversions away from the chief area of operations, Ukraine, in order to distract and to cause division amongst the I would say allied powers, but that would be a kind of a poor choice of words, NATO and NATO affiliated countries, and also it's a way of showing other countries on Russia's borders. Russia is not exclusively looking at Ukraine, and that Russia is a potential threat to anyone that challenges it along its borders. The Moldovan president, Maia Sandu, has criticised the invasion of Ukraine, and the Russian, the Moldovan prime minister has also suggested that Moldovan security and peace and prosperity is best secured by Moldova joining the European Union. So, unfortunately for Vladimir Putin, his attempts to divide NATO, to divide the European Union, have backfired spectacularly, in as much as NATO is now a more divided, or a more united a military bloc than probably at any point since the end of the Cold War. The European Union, similarly, with the exception of Viktor Orban's Hungary, has shown remarkable unity and resolve, even though member states now face higher gas prices and the possibility of gas being switched off altogether, as Europe is largely dependent on Russian gas. But we'll get onto that in a moment. So beginnings of some sort of subversion in Transnistria. So there have been some what have been described by intelligence analysts as mystery explosions going off, is perhaps a way of, as the French term goes, pour encourager les autres, a way of showing that a country like Moldova on Russia's borders doesn't get to speak so casually about being a member of the European Union in quite that way. The mystery explosions were against Russian TV antennae broadcasting Russian language programs, and cynics have, or you know, those who are observing the situation have suggested this might well be a Russian false flag operation, giving Russia scope to intervene in Transnistria and even in Moldova itself to protect Russian-speaking minorities. And it's possible that a conflict in Moldova would be just the sort of thing that Vladimir Putin can justifiably say, well, that's something Russia can win. If you look back at the long history of Russian interventions in Eastern Europe, these have all been kind of largely paramilitary-style policing operations, the crushing of dissent. It's been wars against civilians. Think about Hungary in 1956, and there were risings in Poland in 1953, and something in East Germany before that. There is Prague in 1968. These are, and then various post-Soviet operations against breakaway republics. In most instances, these are wars against civilians. They're not wars against modern armies. And the experience of fighting a guerrilla army in Afghanistan and a modern fighting force in Ukraine, neither of those have been particularly successful experiences for the firstly for the Soviet army, the Red Army, or for the post Russian Federation army. So a war in Moldova, or some sort of a special action or whatever you want to call it in Moldova, would probably be the sort of thing that Vladimir Putin calculates is winnable and is a good way of salvaging some national pride, particularly against a breakaway republic that has talked seditiously of joining with Europe. So on to the kind of the second issue, and here's where I think we're looking at quite an important juncture at the moment in this whole conflict. The words of Antony Blinken, Joe Biden's Secretary of State, was that today he announced that the Western allies of Ukraine, NATO and affiliated countries must now prepare for the long haul. You must prepare for some kind of long struggle. How long is unclear, but I suspect Blinken is talking in terms of years, and he has, and the CIA and the State Department have had a war game, various outcomes to Ukraine, and decided that probably Putin won't be overthrown in Russia, and probably Putin won't be completely routed in Ukraine, though you can never count all of these things, and probably part of Ukrainian territory will be held by Russia for a long, long time. And the way in which Russia can be defeated in the eyes of the Biden administration, and they really are thinking of things in those terms of the total rout and humiliation of Russia in the end, is through sanctions and arms supplies. The German government believes that it will be able to completely free the country from its dependency on Russian oil and gas within the next 6 months. This obviously isn't something that can happen right away, And I would suspect that American shale gas and or fracking gas, which is in great abundance, and Gulf oil and gas.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Will be what Germany will rely on. In order to replace this, there are numerous facilities, numerous German coastal facilities for taking tanker loads of liquid petroleum gas. And so the dependency on Ukraine, on Russian oil and gas, isn't quite as kind of one-sided as one might believe. There are always options and alternatives, though no doubt Germany is going to take quite a mighty economic hit throughout all of this. And I would imagine Putin is relying on the idea that throughout that domestic opposition to continued conflict with Russia within Germany will prevail. If you can make the civilian economy hurt enough, then the hope is that eventually Germans or other Europeans will abandon Ukraine. I get the sense that that's perhaps less likely to happen because a more collective European moment seems to be at hand, as many European citizens in countries from Sweden all the way down to Greece are perhaps looking at the events in Ukraine and wondering which of us might be next. So, I don't know. I suspect that it's going to be much, much harder now for Putin to pick off countries one by one. The threat that is being held to Poland and Bulgaria of a complete cut of gas supplies is very instructive. The Poles themselves have built a new pipeline in partnership with Norway. Bulgaria has a pipeline coming from Greece. Why these two countries are being targeted? Well, Poland has been quite outspoken once again in its criticism of the Putin regime. The nationalist Polish Law and Justice Party, whilst it has taken many a trick from the Putin playbook, still has a huge base of supporters who are traditionally, with very good reason, entirely sceptical about Russian intentions. And there are long, long bitter memories of things like the Katyn massacre and other atrocities perpetrated against Poland by the Red Army, the decision by the Red Army during the Second World War to allow the German Wehrmacht to raise Warsaw to the ground before intervening and destroying the Polish Home Army. These sorts of things that breed a kind of an understandable scepticism. So there's little chance that there will be there is no scope in Poland for any support for Putin's actions in Ukraine, and the outspoken criticism of that, the tacit support that the Poles have given in terms of aid, logistics and military hardware to Ukraine has enraged the Russians, enraged the Putin regime anyway. And so the Poland is the first country that will be punished with a gas ban. The decision by Putin to demand that gas and oil are paid for in rubles places countries like Poland in a difficult position, because obviously in doing so one breaks EU sanctions on Russia, and so there is none of this comes as a surprise to Poland. The government has predicted that this would be Putin's response, and there is, the fate of Ukraine, I think, is very instructive at the moment to Poland. There has been some criticism by Polish generals of Britain's ever unreliable Prime Minister Boris Johnson, who has recently admitted that Ukrainian soldiers are being trained on Polish soil anti-tank missile warfare. And there is kind of a huge outcry here by Poland's top generals saying, this man is a liability. You don't say these sorts of things which are secret during wartime. Of course, in the case of Prime Minister Boris Johnson, this is something that he frequently does, because he doesn't read his briefs. He doesn't read the one-page pieces of paper that somebody very clever in the Foreign Office or MI6 gives him every day. He's not really interested in those sorts of things, and makes all sorts of kind of gaffes and errors with predictably catastrophic consequences. For a Prime Minister who frequently mentions or tries to kind of create a resemblance between himself and Winston Churchill, he is a remarkably idle individual. Whatever one will say about Winston Churchill, and we've talked about him a lot on this podcast, he was quite the workaholic. So there is one of many key differences between our current Prime Minister and Winston Churchill. The interesting thing will be, as we look at the United States readying itself and its allies for this long haul, and you can see this in the amount of military aid being sent, is how figures like Boris Johnson fit into all of that. I would imagine, being without guessing too speculatively, that the White House are looking forward to the probable end of Johnson's career under the weight of multiple scandals coming fairly soon. But should that not happen, should he linger on, how does one help a country like Ukraine into the long term with somebody who is incapable of keeping basic secrets, basic military secrets, and were it the Prime Minister of a less important country, perhaps it would matter less, perhaps. So the Prime Minister would be deposed in some kind of convenient coup. But this is the Prime Minister of Great Britain, and one who unfortunately has to continue being taken somewhat seriously. There are rumours that, in a vain attempt to try to extricate himself from the political mess he's in at the moment, Johnson is looking to destroy the Northern Ireland Protocol, the agreement between Britain and the European Union post-Brexit, that Northern Ireland would stay in effect within the single market and the customs union, and would be part of essentially an economic union with the Republic of Ireland. And all this would, you know, save the Good Friday Agreement and prevent IRA bombs from going off again outside Downing Street and similar things like that. Johnson is just about reckless and callous enough to want to destabilise that in order to distract from his own problems, or to prove to play some old Brexiter kind of hits. However, the vengeance of Irish America will be merciless if that happens. Joe Biden, who has made no secret of his Irish roots and sympathies, and dozens and dozens of senators and representatives, members of the House of Representatives, who rely on Irish votes, Irish American votes, will be very, very unsympathetic towards a Great Britain that meddles with the Northern Ireland Protocol, particularly during a period of international tension, the likes of which we have now. So, everything to play for. Anyway, I'll continue with the update later in the week, and we'll get back to some normal podcasting in the next day or two. Thanks very much. All the best. Bye-bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.